You've tuned in to the most crazy rocking metal podcast on the air. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Metal from the Inside.
Welcome back, everybody, to a brand new episode of the Metal from the Inside podcast. I'm your host, Sydney Taylor, and you are listening to episode 43 of the Metal from the Inside podcast. This week, we have a very fun episode that was really, really fun to record and think about when I was putting it together. And joining me for this episode is Mr. Don Jameson, a very, very good friend of mine. And I'm sure that you are all very familiar with Don and his appearance and work on VH1 Classics' That Metal Show with the one and only Eddie Trunk and Jim Florentine. Don is also a comedian and, of course, an avid heavy metal and hard rock lover. And me and Don talk all the time about our hero, Alice Cooper, and all of the music under the sun. So Don was actually one of my very first guests on the podcast back when I started Metal from the Inside, or the podcast at least, back in early 2020. And we kind of did then more of like a formal interview about what Don had been up to recently. He had just released a brand new comedy record, which he has a couple out. And the really cool things about Don's comedy records are that the covers and the titles are all based on hard rock and heavy metal records that we all love, such as his comedy record, Denim and Laughter, which is, of course, based off of Saxon's record, Denim and Leather. And the covers are all, you know, very similar to the actual covers of the records. You know, he has Hellbent for Laughter as well, which is, you know, Judas Priest pun. So that's besides the point, but those are really great. And you should definitely check them out if you have not heard them already. He does a lot of heavy metal comedy in his sketches and shows as well. But when we had last talked, we talked about the release of his most recent record and just everything that he had been up to, you know, kind of a dive back into his That Metal Show days and his new show, That Jameson Show, on Compound Media, where he does a lot of what I do here. He interviews hard rock and heavy metal musicians and all that fun stuff. So the first time he was on the podcast, it was more based on that idea, but I wanted to have him back on. It had been a year since his last appearance, and we were trying to think of a topic that would be interesting and kind of different to have him back on for. And like I mentioned on a couple of past episodes, I've really been wanting to get into, you know, just some topics about hard rock and metal, maybe not specifically just an interview with a musician or, you know, with somebody like Don, but to sit with somebody like that and talk about a specific topic instead of just speaking on their background or, you know, etc. So Don approached me and he was like, why don't we do an episode on underrated bands? And I was like, hell yes, this is a great episode idea. And I already had a list of bands that I've talked about on the podcast, you know, a little bit here and there in my introductions and on Sea of Tranquility. So I was like, yes, let's do this. Let's give this a go. Ironically enough, I talked about this on the outro of last week's episode on my interview with Dee Snider. But after I had actually done a big poll on Twitter about what people thought were really kind of underrated bands, one that I thought of post recording this episode, unfortunately, which, right, that's when all the good ideas come, is after you're done doing something, was the band Icon, which I love that band. They really went under the radar. You know, they had that self-titled, that debut record, which was super heavy, and then they had Night of the Crime, which was more of an AOR style record, kind of more melodic, that came out in 85, so it was, you know, kind of that time period where melodic rock was really starting to get a little bit more popular. But I brought up Icon, and you guys brought up a ton of other bands. I got over 600 responses, which absolutely blew me away, because you guys came up with some really great ideas and even mentioned some newer bands that I've never even heard of before that I really wanted to check out. So before we get into my conversation with Don, where we share our top five favorite underrated bands. I'm going to read out loud some of your suggestions and give you guys some bands that you might want to check out or see if you agree that a lot of these bands deserved more attention. So the first tweet I'm going to read out loud is from Clara, and Clara says, "The Sweet. They are so much more than Ballroom Blitz and Fox on the Run. They were also the epitome of sex, drugs, and rock and roll in the early days," which I completely agree. They were so much more than those two hits, which are great songs, but did not, you know, I think 100% or should not 100% define The Sweet's career as a band. Matt responded to Clara and said, "Windy City is an underrated classic, catchy and surprisingly heavy with a cool psychedelic mid-song breakdown." So if you haven't actually taken a second to dive into The Sweet's catalog, here is your sign that you should. Next is a band that I just talk about all the time, and I probably haven't talked about on the podcast enough, but in my opinion, one of the most underrated bands from this time period of music that I love, you know, the 80s of hard rock and metal, and that is the band Badlands, which I actually mentioned briefly in my interview with Mark Weiss, as he did shoot a lot of, you know, those photos for that debut record, and, you know, with Ray and Jake and Eric and, you know, all that stuff, you know, during that time period when they were together. But, and I didn't mention them in my list with Don either, which it just completely burns my ass that I forgot them too. But I completely agree. So underrated. I think that their debut, especially maybe now, isn't as underrated as it was upon its release. Or, you know, as the years followed, it's kind of getting a little bit more traction now with some younger rock fans, you know, that are into, of course, this type of music. Maybe not so much the modern metal fans, but if you're into kind of the classic 80s hard rock, you know, even 70s hard rock, you know, I think that that album is getting more that album is getting more notoriety. I'm going to leave that in because that was hilarious. It's getting more notoriety as, you know, the years go on. All right. So Badlands, great band. Again, my friend Paul on Twitter, Paul T Guitarist, which if you're in this whole scene on Twitter, you see him a lot. He mentioned Badlands first and I agreed. Absolutely. All right. I'm going to try not to have any more slip-ups like that. Next up, we have David Nowell, who agreed with my icon mention, and he also included TNT, Rough Cutt, Lion, and Hurricane, which I completely agree. Those are four other bands. You know, I mentioned Icon, but those are four other bands that kind of went under the radar during that time period, and I especially agree with Hurricane and Lion, mostly because I love Doug Aldrich, and, you know, Lion was his main band, and he did perform and write on Hurricane Slave to the Thrill. Kelly Hansen, who also fronts Foreigner now, was the lead singer of Hurricane. And they were just a great hard rock band, really melodic. They came out more so in the late 80s, and they just really went under the radar. And it's funny because when I posted this tweet too, you know, we kind of got into the reasoning. Some people were talking about the reasoning as to why a lot of these bands during this time period, you know, really good bands like Badlands and Hurricane and, you know, a great debut record like Icons, you know, how they went under the radar. And Matt Villa, who actually responded to that sweet tweet, we had a conversation about, you know, it was also just the fact of, you know, simple economics and that there were so many artists and so many albums out at that time that it was just near impossible to purchase them all. And it was something that I didn't really think about, you know, right off the bat, but it's 100% right. So I'm glad that, you know, a lot of these bands are now getting the listening that they deserve, but it's just a shame that it's 30 years later. But nevertheless, their music will live on, but we're going to keep scrolling through here, reading a couple of more. Enough's Enough was mentioned quite a bit, you know, of course, Chips Enough, Fly High, Michelle. Y&T was another band that was mentioned a lot, and that's another one I can completely get on board with. Dave Menichetti was a complete innovator, and, you know, Y&T stands for Yesterday and Today, which was how they used to be billed when they played the Starwood in the late 70s, and people like Eddie Van Halen would come out, and almost all of the guitar players from the 80s that we all love were inspired by Dave Menichetti's guitar work in the late 70s with Yesterday and Today, which went on to become Y&T. And kind of going back to the same kind of sentiment with The Sweet, I think that Y&T is so much more than just Summertime Girls, which I love that song, don't get me wrong. We talked a little bit about this in the glam deep dive that I did with Jack Frost and Rich Catino here on the podcast as well. I love Summertime Girls. It's a fun, great song, but the rest of their records were just fantastic as well. You know, just great. You know, Black Tiger, Mean Streak, just great records, and Contagious, you know, even in 87 was such a great record, and they never got the, you know, acknowledgement that I think that they deserved either. So I love Y&T. Dave Menichetti is 100% an innovator. Honestly, for that scene, I would say maybe not quite as large as Eddie Van Halen, I guess, in the global, you know, revolutionary aspect of like the entire music industry or all genres, but for rock at that time period, Dave Menichetti was an extreme innovator, and Y&T deserved so much more. Okay, that's enough of my Y&T rant. Anyways, we're gonna keep going. Toto, again, another one of those bands that is more than just the song Africa. Africa is like the worst Toto song ever. There are so many more songs that were so great by that band and are so great by that band that are not Africa. Ugh. The list goes on and on. Go ahead, be sure to go to my Twitter at staylorofficial on Twitter, of course, and scroll down, check out this tweet to get some more band suggestions. Give me your opinion, you know, respond to others. Like I said, there are 600 responses, so get into some music discussion with your fellow music fans. My friend Jay Scott from the Hook Rocks also gave us a great modern day pick, Joyous Wolf, which is a fantastic new band. I would actually love to get Nick Reese, frontman, or Blake Allard, guitarist, anybody from that band really here on the podcast to talk about what they've been up to, but I saw them open up for Fozzy, which is Chris Jericho's band, back in 2018. They played the Foundry here in Philadelphia, and the first time that I saw them, they absolutely blew me away. I was not expecting the high energy and like the just the classic, real classic rock vibe that came from them. And they were amazing. Like I said, frontman Nick Reese, you know, in the Foundry here in Philly, which I actually used to work there. I still do, technically. Shows are starting to come back. But in the Foundry, there are these pipes that are, you know, above the ceiling. You know, the Foundry kind of was, the whole building that the Fillmore and the Foundry was in were, you know, old warehouses and old, you know, industrial warehouses in Philadelphia. So there's all these, you know, all this piping in the ceiling, and he was climbing on the piping, like, you know, 10 feet off the ground, just losing his mind. And it was incredible. And it was just one of those shows. I kind of felt this way when I saw the Struts for the first time in a different way. It was just one of those things that absolutely like blew my mind. And I left that show knowing, you know, forever who Joyous Wolf was. So that was a great suggestion by my friend Jay Scott, who has his own fantastic podcast that I've guested on a couple of times called The Hook Rocks. He is such a wonderful advocate for new music. And I love Jay so much. He's so supportive and so great at what he does. And I love his podcast. So be sure to go ahead and check out The Hook Rocks, also available wherever you get your podcasts. But yeah, like I said, go check out that tweet. Don't want to keep you guys here forever, because we are going to get into my conversation with Don Jameson all about our top five favorite underrated bands. If you love listening to the Metal from the Inside podcast, be sure to go ahead and leave a 5-star review on our Apple Podcast page, on our Facebook page, or on our Podchaser page. And Podchaser is exceptionally cool because it actually, you know, lets you know all of the episodes that I've been a guest on, or if you wanted to, let's say, look at my interview with Alice Cooper, it lets you know all of the podcast episodes, you know, if a podcast is on Apple or Spotify, etc., you know, all the episodes that Alice has been on. So Podchaser is really cool. It's a really cool directory for podcasts and creators of any kind. So be sure to go ahead and leave a 5-star review. Leaving a review helps immensely and really helps to get the podcast out there to other hard rock and heavy metal fans. I read a review last week on our Apple Podcast page, and this week I'm going to be reading a review from our Podchaser page. Andre left a 5-star review that says, "Sydney does a great job interviewing the all-time rock stars we all want to talk with and ask some really deep questions. It is a great job that she's doing." Thank you so much, Andre. That means so much to hear and that you are enjoying all of the interviews and conversations. It is extremely appreciated. And I know Andre is a fellow podcaster himself, I'm pretty sure. He follows me on Twitter and has always been so supportive. So it really, really means a lot. You can be just like Andre and have your review read here on the podcast if you go ahead and leave a 5-star review. I will be reading one every single week here on the podcast. So to be just like Andre, go ahead and leave a 5-star review. Thank you guys so much in advance if you do so. Like I said, it really, really helps and it means the world. Without further ado, we are going to get right into my conversation with my friend Don Jameson, where we talk all about our top 5 favorite underrated bands. Welcome back, everybody, to the Metal from the Inside podcast. I'm your host, Sydney Taylor, and I'm joined by my friend Don Jameson, who I have had on the podcast before. Way back when, I think, Don, you were like my second or third guest that I had on the podcast. So he's back. And this time we're doing a fun episode about some underrated bands. So thank you so much, Don, for coming back.
Well, thank you for coming back because you took a little time off and, you know, we got to keep waving the flag for all our favorite bands. And I thought, man, we love to talk about the big bands and have the big guests on, on my webcast as well. But, you know, I was like, you know, but we got to also remember the underdogs, too. So I thought it'd be fun if we did most underrated metal bands, and particularly here in America, because I know some of mine were bigger in other places in the world. But in America, kind of flew under the radar.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a ton of them. And I mean, it's funny because I was going through this and I was like, some of these, you know, I know that people know of them, but I just wish that they could have gotten to, you know, that legendary status. So I think this is going to be fun. I think we both got some good lists. So I'm going to have you go first. The guest always goes first. So Don, give me your fifth, you know, top underrated band.
I mean, listen, you can make a case for a lot of bands that people go, what? How are they underrated? Like Cheap Trick, who's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You could actually make the case that they're an underrated band because, yeah, again, in America, they're, you know, I Want You to Want Me and Surrender, pretty much, you know. So
that's it.
but listen, they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So I didn't pick them. And I think most, pretty much everybody on earth knows who Cheap Trick is. But I wish they knew more of their catalog because the stuff is so great. But no, we're going back now to the new wave of British heavy metal. One of the original bands, came out of that era. And that is Raven. And I got a little breakup here, but that's their album, Stay Hard. It's the first album that I ever got from the band Raven. This one, for whatever reason, was not a popular one with their fans. I think because they got signed to Atlantic. And, I think they made them a little slicker. You know, try to polish, give them a little polish or whatever, you know. Yeah. And you know us metal fans, like, we like our bands to be a little rough around the edges. So, but because I always loved these guys, I thought this was a great album. I thought it would really, I mean, this came out in, what, 85? So, you know, I really thought this one would really catapult them. They had a cool image. You know, they had a drummer. There we go. A drummer that wore a hockey mask, a goalie's mask on stage. And, but the Gallagher brothers, you know, John and Mark, they've been doing this band for like, you know, going on almost 50 years, I think. So they just never broke here in America for whatever reason. They've had their moments and they're still putting out albums. They put out an album last year called Metal City. That was great. So, you know, for me, you know, what are the reasons? Well, you know, probably 95% of their fan base is male. So it's, you know, if you can bring the girls to rock and roll, you know, obviously you could double your audience instantly, but they're definitely a male dominated band. But they've released great albums over the years. And like I said, they still are. So, you know, unfortunately they when bands like Metallica, you know, and Iron Maiden, who are, you know, new wave of British heavy metal people, you know, went to great heights, Raven just sort of flatlined here, but it's a great band.
Yeah, they are great. And again, one of those that, you know, you talk about the big thrash bands and they never, or like the big, you know, just heavy bands, you never make it into that list. So I didn't even think of them, but that's a great choice.
Yeah. And you know, look, bands like Metallica will always give credit where credit's due.
Right.
You know, they talk about, you know, how Saxon, you know, was, you know, Princess of the Night and that kind of stuff was really part of the original thrash movement, because nobody was really playing that fast, and Raven as well. So they get the accolades from their peers, but yeah, the fans just never really, really caught on with them.
Yeah, I completely agree. So my number five is a band that I kind of tossed around as saying underrated, but I've decided that I think that they're underrated, and for the sole reason that I think that they deserved a lot more than they got and that they never really reached that level of that they deserved. So my number five is going to be one of my favorite bands of all time. And I'm going to say Dokken. And I'm going to say Dokken because they were always, and like another band I have on my list, a lot of people who love this type of music know obviously who Dokken is. Like it's their name that people are familiar with. But they never quite got to headlining tours. They were always the opener. They were always opening up for Aerosmith and Twisted Sister. And, you know, I don't know, God knows. I think like they opened up for like Rainbow in 84. You know, they were always the opener and they never quite made it to headlining shows. And by the time that they were even kind of possibly getting to that point, they split up. So, you know, they never quite made it. And I personally always felt that they should have been on a level of, if you want to say like a, with the big bands at that time, like a Def Leppard or a Motley Crue, or, you know, all those bands that nowadays, you know, if you say Motley Crue or Def Leppard, even, you know, people around my age group are familiar with the name, but you say Dokken and I'm like, one of my favorite bands, you know, is Dokken, and people my age are like, who? What's a Dokken? That's what people say to me. They're like, what's a Dokken?
Dokken, oh no. But they'll know Rocking with Dokken. That they'll know, but they don't understand the Dokken part of it. They could,
no.
They just they know it rhymes, but then you go, do you know who Dokken is? And they're like, no.
No, and they never got to that level. And I mean, you know, you had George Lynch, one of the most talented guitarists in that era. And I don't know. I mean, they obviously had some of the hits, you know, In My Dreams and, you know, obviously Dream Warriors eventually. And, you know, but
they never had the big, big giant hit. That was the problem. You're right. They had a lot of hits that within the genre, but, and then, yeah, the movie soundtrack song definitely opened them up to more people, but they just never had, you know, they never had that 18 in life to go, you know, type of song.
No, yeah, they never had it. And I will forever die on that hill of them have been bigger. And it's one of those things where, yeah, I don't know why they didn't. You know, I don't even have really any reason. I was a guest on one of my friends' podcast, The Hook Rocks. I don't know if you ever heard of them. But we had a whole episode where we talked about why Dokken shouldn't have been bigger. I'm like, I don't even have a reason why they didn't get to that point. You know, whether it was just the tension in the band or I don't know, whatever, but I'll always die on that hill that they should have been bigger than they were.
Right. Well, listen, you know, for them, the tension, you know, tension in a band is always a good thing creatively, but their problem was it was too much. You know, it really was, you know, the implosion of the band because George and Don, you know, were like oil and water. So, but their tension was too much, you know, so, you know, it was funny when we had them on that metal show, George and Don, after them, you know, not talking forever, and they were gonna announce that they were reuniting again to do shows, And, you know, Don went on this whole thing. You know, we never really had that much tension. It was the record company trying to just stir something up so people would pay attention to us. And then they spent the entire program arguing with each other. And then they literally decided not to announce a reunion because by the end of the show, they hated each other again. And that was it. So it's tough. You have to have the right amount of tension.
Yeah. And I mean, they're doing some shows now together, which I wonder, you know, I don't know if it's just age or getting older or realizing that if they don't do it now, they might never do it. All right. So what is your number four?
All right. So this this band, not only are they way underrated. There it is. Riot, Fire Down Under, one of the greatest hard rock albums ever. wow. What a story. You know, Riot has such a crazy story. There's actually still a version of Riot that tours around called Riot 5, because I guess they consider it sort of the fifth version of this band. But this original version with Guy Speranza on lead vocals, who had such a clean, distinctive, unique, beautiful voice, very powerful for hard rock. Just as they're starting to break, he goes, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to be a singer. I'm going to go back to being an exterminator, which is literally what he did. And that's, you know, that was really the first downfall for this band, you know? I mean, because they were around since the early 80s. They were at the first Castle Donington in England, you know, which is really where they broke originally. The DJ over there named Neil Kay used to play them on his radio show. And so they kind of got popular, which is a story with, you know, Twisted Sister and a lot of other American bands, is like they catch on, and Guns even, catch on in England first, and then they come back here and take it to the next level. Riot never took it to the next level. Guy Speranza leaves the band. They bring in another singer who's phenomenal, Rhett Forrester, but Rhett's got a totally different voice, very bluesy and soulful. So the band, you know, so it almost became a different band. Then they sort of, then after Rhett left, and then both guys subsequently died after they left, both singers, then they went to more of a thrash kind of sound, like in the early 90s. But so you look, you know, they were their own worst enemy too. I mean, you know, they had the songs, they sort of had the look and the image, and nobody likes the nobody likes the Mighty Teor as much as I do. The one thing they kept was the mascot. Everybody, you know, so many people in and out of this band. It's, you know, look, we all know members and bands get replaced, but it can't be like every 2 weeks, you know, because eventually you're just like, all right, I don't know what the identity of this band is anymore. And are they a bluesy, soulful band? Are they a thrash band? Are they a hard rock band from New York? They're all that. But unfortunately, it just was never a cohesive thing. But, you know, if you're watching this podcast or listening to this and you don't have this album Fire Down Under, for shame on you.
Yeah, for shame. Even though it's probably hands down, if anybody asks me, what is the worst album cover you think you've ever seen? I might say Fire Down Under. I remember seeing that for the first time and I was like, what is going on here? Like, why is there a seal on here? And but yeah, the mascot kept. I mean, you look at all the other, you know, following records and he's there, man.
I like it because I really never put much thought into it. So right. It was just always there. Until we actually discussed it on that metal show once, and I didn't realize how many people didn't like the Mighty Teor, which the mascot actually has a name. But it's funny what catches on with people or what doesn't. You know, I had Rick Nielsen on my webcast, and I would ask him about the Checkerboard. You know, and he sort of, you know, he was like, I don't know why it caught on. It, you know, is just something that we started using and it caught on. I was like, yeah, it's strange. You never sort of know what's going to catch on with people.
My number four is another band kind of from the same era that I spoke about before. But again, I don't think ever really received the recognition that they deserved. And I'm going to go with Tesla. I love Tesla so much. And again, another one of those bands that just never quite broke, I feel like, huge. They were always the opener. They were always, you know, kind of following in the footsteps of a Def Leppard, but again, never made it
to be Def Leppard. They were always opening up for Def Leppard and never made it to that level. And I think partially they just weren't super image focused. You know, they were just guys that came out. They were dressed in jeans and a t-shirt. And, you know, Jeff Keith had a little bit of that, you know, flashy, a little bit of that stuff in the beginning. But other than that, I mean, they were just kind of a bluesier band. And I guess at that time, you know, the Great Radio Controversy came out in 89. And that was at that point where a lot of those bands were just getting super, it was just super saturated and it was really image heavy. And eventually, I mean, we can kind of see how that went and why those bands didn't last for that long because it was getting just super saturated. But yeah, they just really weren't fitting the mold. And I just don't think that they got a ton of press. I talked to Brian Wheat. He was on my podcast when his book was coming out. And he kind of said the same thing. They didn't really get any press and it just led to them not being super big, but they're one of my all-time favorite bands. I mean, The Great Radio Controversy ranks as one of my favorite albums of all time. It's just a shame. I think that they should have been a lot bigger than they were.
Yeah. You know, you're spot on. I mean, it really was. They didn't know what category to put them in. Even nowadays, it's like, if you listen to the rock stations on Sirius XM, they kind of default them to the Hair Nation channel for whatever reason, but they don't really belong there. But, you know, listen, you know, they could have had a career like Aerosmith. You know, what category did Aerosmith fit into? But, you know, Aerosmith was born out of the 70s and Tesla was born out of the 80s. They had their huge moments on MTV. My God, I mean, Love Song was played every 10 minutes. But yeah, you're right. They were just a jeans and t-shirt band, and it's just I don't know. Again, it's I don't know why bands have to fit into a certain category. You know, it's befuddling to me. But again, hey, listen, a band that's still going. It's still pretty much the original band except for one member. So, God bless, we still got them.
Well, that's what I was going to say, too, is that, you know, you look at now all these kind of like festivals that cater to that type of music, you know, you go to the Monsters Rock Cruise every year and they're doing the Monsters on the Mountain thing. And I mean, Tesla, like M3, they're pretty consistently booked when it comes to like, you know, that period. So they're definitely recognized. But, you know, it's just, you know, they never even when they were big, you know, they play a lot of these like smaller theaters now and they're doing headlining shows. And it wasn't that much different, you know, when they were at their peak either. You know, they're still touring with Def Leppard. I mean, I don't know. I'll always, again, similar to Doc, I'm always dying that hill of that they should have been a lot bigger. So
definitely. Tough. All right. My number three is the band Angel.
Yeah.
Everybody right now, everybody's going, whoa, what?
With one of the Angel. Coolest logos ever.
Right. Well, yeah, it's the same right side up as it is upside down. Which a fan actually drew and sent it to them, and that's how they got the Angel logo. But look, you can see the white outfits. You know, if I could get it, this was the Angel was the anti-Kiss. Yeah. You know, they were, you know, Gene Simmons sort of discovered them, brought them into Casablanca Records to Neil Bogart and all those guys, and that's how they positioned them. You know, Kiss, you know, back in the day, you know, was they were the dark, you know. You know, they wore all black leather. They were the dark forces, Gene being the demon. Angel was supposed to be the antithesis of that. The white outfits, the heavenly, whole heavenly thing. Yeah. You know, live in concert, they would come out. They would each, there was an announcement. It was the first time a hologram was really ever used at a rock show. Now we see, you know, Ronnie Dio has a hologram and Frank Zappa has a hologram. But they used to have a hologram of God. And he would tell the whole story of how these five angels came to come together on earth to bring the music from heaven to the people on earth. And as he introduced each one, a pod would light up and they'd be inside the pod and the door would open and they would step out. And it was a whole thing. But there's really no footage of that because, you know, this is a firmly a 70s band. And they really didn't, you know, videotape a lot back then, like we do now. You know, there was no cell phones, there was no YouTube or any of that stuff. Angel started out really as a progressive rock band, but then they, you know, they got fine tuned to write more, you know, 3.5 minute, you know, more, you know, poppy rock songs. So they were still heavy, but you know, instead of writing 6 and 7 minute songs, they were writing 3.5 minute songs for radio. Just never caught on for whatever reason. Talented dudes, You know, Greg Jafria went on to do House of Lords and his own band Jafria, and now is a multi-billionaire for inventing a chip that plays the music in the slot machines in casinos. So, you know, Frank Domino, the singer, still puts out records and does shows. Punky Meadows, the original guitar player, same thing. Yeah. He's still kicking around and doing stuff. So, but I don't think you're going to drag Greg away from his billions of dollars to play, a small club in Jersey or Pennsylvania. It's just, right. It's just not, you know, the fan base just isn't there for these guys, but I always loved them.
Yeah. They were a great band. I have that record too behind me somewhere. I think Martin Popoff did a whole like biography book about them, you know, recently. And yeah, they're just one of those bands that a lot of people don't really, I've never heard one person that's outside of, I don't know, liking this music, been like, have you ever heard of Angel? Does it happen?
You know, the other thing with them, if they either started later and ended later or was able to make it into even the early part of the 80s,
right.
I really think they would have capitalized on the whole MTV thing because they had such an image, but yeah. People didn't really see it. You saw it on the album covers and the photographs inside, but you know, they would have been a great video band. You know, I think they would have really blown up if they could have taken advantage of the MTV generation, but it was not to be.
Yeah. And if it's another album, if you're listening, if you've never listened to White Hot or any of those records, get on it because you're missing out. So my number three is actually going to be a band that's a newer band. And it's a band that still, they've been out for a couple years now, and they still have not managed to reach really a big U.S. or American audience. And that's the band Lucifer, which I'm not sure. I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with Lucifer.
Yeah.
Great band from Sweden. I had Johannes Adonis on the podcast way back when, too. And she's great and great vocalist, female vocalist. And they've not caught on here, and they're very like a Black Sabbath, you know, like doomy type of band. A lot of influence from kind of that classic era, which I feel like we're seeing a lot, you know, that's having a big comeback. A lot of bands, especially, you know, overseas and everything. But they've been around for, I don't know, I think well over 5 years now. And they came to Philly like 2 years ago, and they played one of the smallest clubs that I think I've ever seen a band play, like Kung Fu Necktie. And I was like, man, I just feel like they deserve to so much bigger. Like they're way big in like Sweden and Germany, and they play festivals and all these big things, and they just haven't managed to break it over here. And I hope that they prove me wrong and that one day it happens, but it's just, I feel like a hard market. We talked about it. I'm on the show weekly, and we had a whole conversation about it, about maybe part of it's their name, which is completely fair, but I'm like, man, come on guys. Like we're still really on this satanic panic thing. Like mm-hmm. It's crazy. But
I don't, yeah. Well, listen, I'm, you know, with music, I'm always 16 years old. So, yeah. You know, when I first heard that there was a band called Lucifer, obviously the first thing I did was had to check them out.
Right.
I think that kind of music, Sid, is they kind of have a limited audience, yeah. Really, you know, and so that's probably part of the problem. Obviously, what sets them apart from the 80 billion other bands that sound like Black Sabbath is having, you know, the female vocalist in the band. They have a cool image and everything. I think they just have to write some stuff that's a little more accessible. It's, you know, obviously you're not going to get really any radio airplay, but you know, some of these bands, even, you know, Jose Mangan on Liquid Metal is great with trying to, you know, give a boost to a lot of these, you know, newer bands or bands that, you know, he feels are underrated and gives them a bit of a platform, and that helps. But yeah, to come over here from Sweden to play Kung Fu Necktie for 13 people, it's like, how much money am I going to lose going to America to try to break this band? You know, you don't have a record company, you know, record companies don't pay for tour support anymore or any of that stuff, or very few anyway. So it's really all on the band to do everything themselves. And it's tough. Social media only does so much, but they're a good band. So hopefully they will prove you wrong and you'll be able to erase them from the list.
I hope so. I mean, it's, and you're kind of right. I don't think that they've had a super, you know, you look at a lot of these bands, like I'm thinking of like a Hailstorm or like an Evanescence, where they have like these, you know, female vocalists and they're pretty big here and they play, you know, they'll play festivals and stadiums and everything. I think just Lucifer, yeah, it's just not a, that type of band where they have a lot of like melodic hits that people are going to be like super stoked about. I mean, they have some, I personally love their albums. I think they have some great songs, but yeah, I don't think it's right now they have the songs that are kind of going to reach that type of audience, but hopefully they'll, I don't want them to sell out either. That's the thing, is like, they're so great. I don't want them to turn into something that they're not to get. So.
Yeah. And there's, you know, it's, again, they're a young band, so they still have time. Obviously most of the ones that we're talking about it, they're, you know, their time has kind of passed, yeah. But there's so many other ways too to capitalize and get success. I mean, there's bands that are like have huge followings because they were in a video, you know, a video game or, you know, something like that, you know. Right. So there's that whole avenue, which has also been good for old artists. I mean, you know, to hear my, you know, back when she was 5 years old, my niece walking around the house, 5 years old, singing Alice Cooper Schools Out, is like, how would you ever know that? And it's like, oh, it's on, he's on Guitar Hero, and we play that all the time. So, you know, there's other ways to kind of, you know, get your foot in the door with fans. So we'll see what happens with them. So this guy's been in the game a really long time, but he won't come tour in America because, or very rarely, I should say, but he hasn't done it in a long time because, again, there's no money.
Yeah.
And it sucks because he's a legend. Michael Monroe.
Absolutely.
There's the newest album right there, One Man Gang. And I'm sure he feels like that. You know, what more can the guy do? You know, Hanoi Rocks, you know, his original, you know, the band that brought him notoriety in the beginning, that, God, I mean, you know, you talk about these bands going to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and their influence. It's like Michael Monroe and Hanoi Rocks were such an influence on so many, especially the Sunset Strip bands. I mean, look no further than Guns N' Roses. You know, Axl will tell you, you know, he, you know, without Hanoi Rocks, man, there would be no Guns N' Roses. So, you know, Michael's been making solo albums with his solo band, which is beyond ridiculously good, for years now, decades now. And, you know, he's a phenomenal performer, but, you know, like I said, they can't come here and play. You know, he lives in Finland. He's not coming from Finland to lose, you know, 50 grand.
No.
Or 100 grand. You can't do it. So, you know, in the meantime, if people don't know Michael's stuff, I mean, this is just, it's as good straight up hard rock and roll as you're ever going to hear.
I've never even like had the opportunity because, yeah, he just doesn't come here. I'm like, and it's also hard to go to, you know, on our end, go to like, you know, Finland and Germany and all these places to see him play. It's like, I don't know. I hope if he does like a final something, maybe he'll come here and do some shows or something kind of as a farewell, but he's great, man. That's a
yeah. Good show. He's the only guy that can get away with playing a saxophone in a hard rock band.
Yeah. He's fantastic. And those new records are great. And the fact, I mean, how old is he now? He's got to be in his late 60s, mentally.
No, you know what? He had a birthday recently. I was actually surprised, and maybe I saw it wrong, but well, we could, obviously I'm sure we can Google it and find out. I swear. I thought it said happy 58th birthday, but that can't be possible.
No, I don't. I mean, I think he might be a little bit older than that. But I guess
it's gotta be in his 60s.
Been around forever. He's been doing so much stuff for so many years, but I mean, he's still out there. He still looks good. He's still killing.
Yeah.
It. Crazy.
Yeah. And he's just got such a great voice. And the thing I love really the most about Michael Monroe and his band, because like really, like Steve Conte is a genius on guitar. There's never a wasted note. It's everything is so freaking tasty and good and not obvious. I love that. And then Sammy Yaffa on bass, guys, every time I see him, I go, Sammy, you're a genius. You know that? He really is. And he puts together this band that focuses on songwriting. Like you can listen. This is, you know, like Lucifer is a band you got to kind of get into that headspace with. This is like by the second chorus of any Michael Monroe song, you're already singing it because they're so identifiable. And, you know, it's got that punk rock sort of vibe to it, but yet the music is sort of a throwback to the, you know, just, you know, good rock and roll, you know, simple beats, you know, simple riff and all that, but it's just what everybody brings into it and the great songwriting that makes it so cool. Like any song that they do about New York City, you feel like you're walking around New York at that time and place. Yeah. And hit, like they have a song called The Ballad of the Lower East Side. I live down in that neighborhood, and the way they sing it, I'm like, I can picture myself walking through Tompkins Square Park and all these places. So it's just such a, there's such a visual element to the lyrics and again, the punk rock ethos of all of it. So go out and buy Michael Monroe.
My number two is going to be a band that I saw at M3, I think 2 years ago, and they blew me away. And I had known their stuff before them, but I kind of really went back and dove into it a little bit more. And that's the band Vain. I love Vain, and they went so underneath the radar. That first record, No Respect, is one of the best records, I feel like, of that entire time period. But with Vain, and why I think that they never really got huge was, again, a first record came out in 89, so similar to Tesla. By the time they kind of hit big time, things were already kind of sizzling out a little bit. But also, they started out in the Bay Area, which is, you know, was known mostly for the thrash scene, and they were not thrash. They didn't go to LA. They were in Island Records, and they were in the Bay Area, and then they went to New York, and then they went back to the Bay Area, and they just never really hit huge. They had a couple albums, obviously, after No Respect. And man, I saw them, like I said, at M3, I think, back in 2019, and Davey Vain still sounds as good as he did on that record live, and I'm pretty sure it's close to a lot of the original members. I think it might be off one or two of the original members, but, you know, Davey's still there, Delana is on guitar, and I don't know, I think that they just went so underneath the radar. They become one of my favorite, you know, bands from that time period, and more people should know about them, because I see when people post about them, a lot of people say that they've never even heard of them, which, you know, it's a shame. So if you haven't listened to Vain, I definitely highly recommend that you go listen to No Respect, because it's freaking amazing.
it's a great one. I missed the boat on Vain completely. So, you know, I'm a victim of that. And why? I don't know. I have no idea why I missed the boat on those guys. I got to, speaking of boats, I actually got to see them on the Monsters of Rock cruise.
Right.
And I was like, wow, like, I can't believe these guys just completely slipped under the radar for me. But there's a little movement afoot with these guys, but yeah, they just never got there. And I feel bad that I missed the boat on them, but yeah, great rock and roll, sort of like Michael Monroe. It's just great hard rock, straight up loud freaking guitars, great vocals, great songs. So yeah, Vane's a good one.
Yeah. And again, they were kind of, I feel like for the people who did know them, they were categorized into that kind of glam metal, like hair metal type, you know, genre. But yeah, like Tesla, you know, I don't think that they were even really, their music could even kind of be constituted to being, you know, at that time, everyone, you know, assumed those kinds of bands were being cheesy or whatever. And I don't know. I mean, they had a little bit of an image thing when they first started. They had a lot of like big hair or whatever, but I don't know. I think it's kind of a good mix between just classic kind of hard rock. And even some of it has a little bit of like that, there's some songs on that record that have a little bit of like punk feeling to them.
Yeah, it's weird. Them and Jet Boy, you know, didn't really fit in. You're right. They didn't fit into that Bay Area scene really. So maybe, you know, that could be, you know, that you know, your geography also can be a part of it. Like, had Metallica never gone to the Bay Area, would they have become Metallica? If they had stayed in Los Angeles, would they have ever really become, you know, the number one big four of thrash, or would they ever have become as big as they are? Well, you know, I suppose they would have, but had they not made that move, was really critical. And they only stayed in the Bay Area for like a year, but it was just enough to really get that street cred and position them to where now they could go to the next level. So who knows, maybe if Vane and Jet Boy went to LA, they would have rode the wave of all those other bands that were getting big at the time. We'll never know. Well, there's always a reason or multiple reasons. And sometimes, you know what? I hate to say it. Sometimes it's just, that's rock and roll.
Yeah.
Sometimes the breaks just don't happen, but it doesn't mean you're not great. You can probably imagine what my number one's going to be.
Yeah.
Of course, it's going to be the Genius, Phil Lynott, and Thin Lizzy. Their classic double live album, Live and Dangerous. Yeah, in America, it's The Boys Are Back in Town and maybe Jailbreak. That's all anybody knows of Thin Lizzy. I always encourage people, it's never too late to jump on the bandwagon and get into them. To me, they are a band. You know, sometimes bands, if you didn't get into them then, it's hard to get into them now. You know, sometimes it's hard to go back and try to get into a band because it's the moment's kind of passed. Thin Lizzy is a band like anybody could go back and really be seduced by Phil's singing and his lyrics. It's, you know, he was a poet, you know. Great bass player, which was obviously overshadowed by his, he's the smoothest voice in rock and roll ever. And obviously there was so much more than Boys Are Back in Town. While it's a great song, but, you know, we've heard it 80 billion times, and I probably wouldn't even put it in their top 20 best songs.
No.
But that song is a good example. Again, what I was talking about with like Michael Monroe, which is, you know, when you're listening to that song and the lyrics to that song, you feel like you're down at Dino's Bar and Grill, and you're seeing the whole scene unfold as he's singing it. That's the power of Phil's lyrics and the music that they made. Listen, a band with tons of tension in it at all times. But part of that was their downfall. You know, Brian Robertson, you know, obviously brilliant guitar player, but he was a tortured guy. You know, he and Phil always butt heads. And then they were their own worst enemy in a lot of ways. You know, when they were supposed to come and headline in America, Phil got hepatitis because he was pretty deep in his addiction by then, and his body just couldn't fight against anything. They had to cancel a headlining tour. You know, Brian Robertson got in a bar fight and cut his hand open on a broken bottle. That delayed recording an album. They threw him out of the band. Gary Moore comes in. Gary and Phil love each other, but they butt heads, you know. And then, you know, some of the later albums did start to, they started to lose a bit of the quality of the earlier stuff. But, I got Florentine into them like maybe 10 years ago. So it's, you know, it's never too late to jump on the Thin Lizzy bandwagon.
Yeah. They're really just so much more than that, than Jailbreak, that, you know, that whole album is probably the most notable, you know, here and from people. But it's really funny because I do the show every week on Sea of Tranquility, which a lot of the people who watch this have come over to my stuff from there. But one of our panelists, his name's Butch Jones, and like Thin Lizzy's his favorite band of all time. And I've actually kind of gotten a little bit deeper into them. Like I'd known their stuff past, you know, Jailbreak and everything, but I've kind of gotten into some of the more obscure albums because of him. And it's killer. I don't know how people haven't.
Butch rivals me, you know, as far as his knowledge and his passion for this band. Yeah. You know, obviously I took it a step further, you know, literally got, you know, becoming friends with Phil's mom.
Yeah.
And going to Dublin every year to visit with her and go to Phil's grave and pay tribute and to his, you know, there's a statue of him in Dublin. And so while Thin Lizzy was much bigger on the other side of the pond here, it just wasn't there. I'm happy to see him nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm sure they probably will never get in, but at least it's good. At least they're in the conversation. So that makes me happy. But just great influential band. Just criminal that they never really broke. And if I was Eddie Trunk, instead of Thin Lizzy being my number one, it would probably be UFO. You know, because that's Eddie's, this is my UFO, you know, for Eddie is Thin Lizzy, you know. And it was funny because Eddie got me back into UFO, and I got Eddie back into Thin Lizzy. Like, we always liked both those bands, But, you know, when you have a passion for a band, you know, it really rubs off on people, you know. Yeah. And and I hadn't listened to UFO in forever. And just Eddie just has such the passion. I'd go, I got to get back and listen to them again. And he did the same thing with Thin Lizzy. So that's my number one.
It's funny that you should say what you just said, because my number one is UFO. and I was debating this, and I was like, you know, I had always known that, you know, UFO had been just a huge influence to a lot of bands. And I guess it really hit me when I saw the documentary Murder in the Front Row. And pretty much every thrash band and anybody mentioned that documentary cited UFO as probably one of the biggest influences. And they don't get any credit at all, in my opinion. I mean, like, Strangers in the Night is probably my favorite live album of all time. And I got a UFO because of my dad. He would play, you know, Phenomenon all the time and Strangers in the Night all the time. And, I started to really love UFO and, you know, Michael Schenker. And, so I love UFO, and they don't get the credit that they deserved, I feel like, for being such an influence to a lot of the bands in America. And I don't know, like, just Metallica, Megadeth, Exodus, you know, Testament.
Steve Harris from Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
Wears the striped spandex pants because of Pee Way from UFO.
Right. And it's, they influenced an entire, you know, just an entire movement. And it's funny because, you know, you look at UFO, when you listen to UFO, you know, they're not a band that I guess you would think, you know, if you are, I guess, super knowledgeable, you know, would influence such a heavy band as a Megadeth or a Metallica. But, you know, at that time when they were putting that stuff was super heavy. And, you know, it's because bands like Metallica and Megadeth didn't exist yet. So, you know, they were kind of the catalyst for all those bands. And yeah, I don't know. I don't think that they ever got the credit that they deserved. Or, you know, like, Pete Way passed away. And aside from, you know, people like us who know about Pete Way, you know, it wasn't like this big, you know, when David Bowie died or something, or, you know, it wasn't this huge thing. Just the innovation that those guys had, I feel like they deserved so much more than they got. So yeah, I love UFO.
Yeah, I think, you know, and Thin Lizzy and UFO are sort of in the same boat. Again, their own worst enemies sometimes, lineup changes, bad roll of the dice here or there. But Phil Mogg, their singer, and Phil Lynott from Thin Lizzy, both mad geniuses. I mean, you know, Phil Mogg's lyrics are very underrated too. Again, another band that, man, he invokes such a visual element when you're listening to the music. And, you know, just, you know, listen, anybody, it's solid songwriting, you know, and no matter how heavy a band you are, you can always appreciate great songs and great songwriting, which is, you know, kind of a lost art these days. But UFO is a good one.
This was fun. It was like we had our own little, like, that metal show moment.
Yeah.
Well, from the inside. And when you brought up this idea, I was like, man, it's like, I wish I could get one of the boards, you know, with the Velcro to do the...
Yeah. We should have Jennifer come on with us and do the board. But you're like me, which is, you know, always to pay homage to the bands from the past, because they're the ones that have influenced the new ones that we're, you and I are still discovering these days, because there really are so many of them. But but also to, you know, root for the underdog and fight for them, and just, you know, the more you can talk, you know, I did one whole season of that metal show where I just talked about Angel, and that really, you know, kind of rekindled interest for Frank Dimino and Punky Meadows to start making music again. So it's like, you know, the more we could get these names out there and remind people about them, you know, it helps keep them alive. And then obviously, again, discovering new bands and trying to get the word out on those. You do a great job at that. I always try to do that on my webcast. I just hit 100 episodes a couple weeks ago, which I'm really proud of. And then we'll see what the future of that metal show is. You never know. What comes around goes around.
You should go ahead and text Eddie and ask him, you know.
Yeah.
Have you tried Netflix?
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a while since we've tortured him on social media. So it might be time to fire that up again.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, it's funny. I completely kind of what you said. You know, I had somebody, I talked about Tesla a lot on Sea Tranquility. I talk about them like all the time. And I've had a couple people email me and ask me, you know, what like album recommendations, you know, I should give them from Tesla. And they've gotten back to me and they said that they've loved them. And I'm like, man, if I could get one person to listen to those albums and just know who they are, you know, it's a success in my book. It's the reason I do this. I feel like a lot of, you know, the reason that either one of us do this. So.
Well said, Sid.
Yeah. Well, I know that you kind of been having shows pop up. You're starting to do comedy shows again and all that stuff. So do you have any shows coming up? Because I know you mostly do them in the tri-state area, you know, PA, New York, New Jersey and stuff. But what have you got coming up soon?
There's a bunch of stuff. If people follow me on my social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, I'm on all those. You know, Don Jameson, Jamieson. I'm going to go down to, I'm not performing. I'm not there in any official capacity, but I am going to go down to M3 this year on Friday and Saturday and just go and hang and rock out with Jim and Eddie and have a good time. So, but yeah, if you see me doing stand up in your town, come on out. I'll definitely be a good amount of rock and roll jokes in there as always. And it's always a good time. It's good to be on stage performing again. And it's especially great to see bands back on stage performing again. That ripped my heart out and yours as well for all this time we've been locked down. So good. Go out and support everyone you can. Anyone that you can afford to go out and see, go see them. And it really is therapy to be back working again.
Yeah. I see my first show back is I'm seeing Guns N' Roses on July 31st. And it's going to be weird going into a stadium and actually seeing a show. Like I might cry. I might cry. I cry a little bit. And then also it's new episodes of that Jamieson show every Tuesday, right? It's every Tuesday.
Yeah. Compoundmedia.com. Like I said, just did my 100th show, it's my little placeholder until that metal show makes its triumphant return someday. It's like the Tony Iommi years of Black Sabbath when he had like 15 different singers in there. And then eventually, you know, he was waiting for Ronnie or Ozzy to come back. And then they both eventually did. So you never know.
Yeah.
But I, you know, as much as you, I loved to just getting into it with these musicians and talking about all this great music that we love. And, you know, there's still such a passion for it after all these years. So, that's where you can find me on there as well.
All right. Awesome. Thank you so much, Don, again, for coming on. It's always a pleasure to have you. And next time I'll get you on and we can talk a little bit about Alice Cooper. So
you never have to twist my arm for that.
Awesome, guys. Thanks so much for checking out another episode of Metal from the Inside. We'll be back next Friday with a brand new episode. And be sure to stay up to date with us on all of our social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that fun stuff. And we will see you next time. Thanks for watching.
You guys just finished listening to episode 43 of the Metal from the Inside podcast with Mr. Don Jameson. In this episode, we talked all about our top 5 favorite underrated bands. Be sure to reach out to Don and I. Go ahead and tweet us and let us know what your favorite underrated band is. If you think we left somebody off the list, if you think that another band should have taken the place of somebody on our list, go ahead and let us know. Like I mentioned, it was so much fun to record this episode with Don. We're always talking about music off the record, so it was fun to actually sit down and record this for an episode of the podcast. Don is always welcome, so if you guys have any ideas of what you would like to have me and Don talk about here, I'd love to have him on again somewhere in the near future to talk about a topic that you'd be interested in hearing about. So be sure to go ahead and tweet Don and I. Let Don know what you would want to have him talk about here on the podcast. We'll make it happen. If you really loved what you heard and are interested in donating to the Metal From the Inside podcast, the best place to do so is at www.anchor.fm/metalfromtheinside. Here, you can go ahead and click on the support button and donate either $1, $5, or $10 a month directly to the podcast. No donation, though, is required to listen. We are available for 100% free on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, wherever you get your podcasts. Also, be sure to go ahead and subscribe to the Metal from the Inside YouTube channel. We are almost at 1,500 subscribers on the YouTube channel, and here you can watch all of the interviews that you can also listen to here on the podcast, and that includes this week's episode with Don. You can watch Don and I's Zoom call and actually see our faces and see us holding up the records, most importantly. So if you would like to check out our YouTube channel, go ahead and subscribe and hit the notification bell as well so you don't miss any episodes or videos posted. The other best places to keep up with Metal from the Inside are, of course, our website, which is www.metalfromtheinside.com. We are also on Instagram at Metal from the Inside, on Twitter at MFTI Official, and you can go ahead and like our official Facebook page of the same name. If you'd like to stay up to date with me, Sydney Taylor, in real time, you can follow me on Instagram at Sydney Anna Taylor and on Twitter at S Taylor Official. I am always up for chatting hard rock and heavy metal with you guys, so never hesitate to tweet me, send a message, or reach out. Thank you so much again for taking the time to listen to this week's episode, episode 43 of the Metal from the Inside podcast. If you missed last week's episode, episode 42, I had the opportunity to sit down and speak with the one and only SMF himself, Mr. D. Snyder, original frontman for the band Twisted Sister. D is releasing his brand new solo record, Leave a Scar, on July 30th via Napalm Records. And since the episode's debut last week, it was picked up by Metal Injection, Ultimate Guitar, and was also covered by one of Germany's biggest metal magazines, Metal Hammer. So it's done quite well, and I thank all of you so much for taking the time to listen, for sharing it, for getting the word out there, and for being so great. It means the world, and I appreciate it so much. Stay tuned. We'll be back here next week for a brand new episode, episode 44 of the Metal from the Inside podcast. I'm your host, Sydney Taylor. Rock on.